Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for Voice of Indie. Your hosts today are Beam Weeks, author, producer, and marketing monster for independent multimedia publisher Fresh Ink Group, and Stephen Jeeves, author, producer, composer, and publisher for Fresh Ink Group.
And good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Voice of Indie podcast, show number 68. I am your host, Beam Weeks, and a note here at the very beginning, we are not live tonight. We are this is a pre-recorded program, but it's a brand new program. It's not an encore program, so keep listening. We've got a new first-time guest on tonight, so tune in and meet a new author. With me is in the studio here is Stephen Jeeves, my co-host. How you doing, Stephen?
I'm confused. If this is pre-recorded, how am I talking?
I don't know, man. It's the technology of the day, I think.
I'm doing fine. It's been a beautiful week, sunny. I worked all night last night and was looking at the sunrise, and the coots came in and circled around and kind of looked at me, and everything just seemed nice and peaceful for a minute.
All right. We had a little bit of snow up this way, a little dusting over the weekend and then this morning, but it's gone again. It's melted.
Wow.
A little too early for me.
So we've got a book out, Girl Wears Those Shoes, by Houston real estate magnate Jenny Wong. It is now out there populating. I noticed that digital books are popping up first, so get out there, get your order in. It'll be released middle of December, I believe, but you can order now. And that's Girl Wears Those Shoes. We also have a cool video for it that you want to go over and check out on YouTube. Like it, subscribe. You know, put money in an envelope, mail it directly to me, whatever.
And hit the share button as well.
Yeah.
We also have Whoopi Likes Her Bacon Crispy. This is a cool book of quotations from famous women compiled by author Jay Ash Looney. And this is in pre-sale right now, and the release is the Tuesday before Thanksgiving. So keep that in mind.
If you miss a show, find us in the archive, in the Fresh Ink Group channel on YouTube, on Spotify, or under the podcast tab at freshinkgroup.com, beamweeks.com, and stephengees.com. On YouTube, be sure to like and subscribe.
Right.
Yeah. Now, From Chaos with Love, a book of 220 poems by Joshua Stutzman, is published this week. It is starting to populate. It should be popping up any minute now over at your favorite retailer, so get out there and start watching for that. Also, cool new video for that book, too. Get over to our YouTube channel and like, subscribe, do all your favorite things.
And Legacy of Danger by Patricia A. Guthrie is out now and coming soon. There's also a video for that one, so get over there and check that out as well at the Fresh Ink Group YouTube channel. Eerie Charm. This is a collection of short stories, some really cool stuff, too. That's coming soon, so keep your eyes peeled for that one as well.
Stay on top of these podcasts and all things Fresh Ink Group with our weekly digital newsletter, new releases, videos, stories, excerpts, interviews, and more. Sign up now on the homepage of freshinkgroup.com and be the one who knows what's what.
So while you're over there at the Fresh Ink Group channel on YouTube, checking out all those cool book trailers, check out the one for Dance of the Lights. It was my first novel, and we never made a trailer for it. So we finally got around to doing that. It's cool. We had a lot of fun. Go check it out. Like I said, that's my first novel. That was written several years before the Civil War. So it took us a while to get around to making the video. Have fun with it.
Yeah. Again, hit that like button and share it. Share it on social media. Okay, now, as I promised, we do have a guest, and this is not an encore presentation. It's pre-recorded, but we have a first-time guest. Award-winning and USA Today best-selling author Astrid Vijay was born in South Africa. She is a trained social anthropologist and certified transformational life coach. She currently resides in Sweden with her husband and their two children. In early childhood, she showed an interest in reading and languages, interests which her family encouraged. Astrid started writing her first novel at age 12 and now writes fantasy in a variety of genres, exploring her passion for cultures and languages. When she isn't writing, Astrid likes to read, take walks in nature, play silly games with her children, and do embroidery and play music. And with that, welcome to the show, Astrid. We are excited to have you here.
Hi, Astrid.
Hi, and thank you so much for inviting me here. It's a great honor to be here with you.
Now, Sweden, this is where you're from, but you were born in South Africa. And by the way, thank you for doing with us this interview with us at this time. I know that had we done it at our normal time, it would have been it wouldn't have worked on your end. So we were appreciative that you were able to work us in at this time. But you were born in South Africa. When did you make the move to Sweden?
As an adult, 7 years ago. I was raised in South Africa. I lived there for the first 20 years of my life. And I've actually lived a little bit in Germany, France, Mexico, and now Sweden.
Wow. Kind of globe hopping.
Yeah, my life has been very much that of a migratory bird.
So what took you to so many places?
Some would say madness, others would say love.
Some would say both. Those are the same thing.
My husband is Mexican-Swedish.
Okay.
And my father is German, and my mother is a South African-Italian.
Wow.
So then what put you into Sweden specifically?
My husband and I had both been trying to make things work out in Mexico. And after 4.5 years, we just realized that it wasn't working and it really wasn't worth fighting to make things work. He hadn't been able to get a fixed job for that entire time. And I was just finishing my master's in social anthropology. And we decided, well, it was time to start a family. And Mexico would have meant that our children would have grown up upper class. And I really didn't want to give them that chip on their shoulder. So we decided while I was pregnant to move to Sweden. Because that was a good option.
So are your children grown now?
My children are 6.5 and 3.
Oh, not quite grown.
Not grown at all.
No.
A couple of years away from leaving home.
Well, if you ask my 3-year-old, she's ready.
Now,
once to walk out that door and paint her own home. She told me today that she didn't like the white walls. She doesn't want them white. They have to be colorful.
Nothing wrong with that. Now,
well, when you're subletting, there is a minor problem with that.
Oh yeah,
yeah. So, life in South Africa. As a child growing up, were you into reading and writing? Obviously, in your bio, I read that you started your first novel at 12. How far back does this go? Your love of reading and writing.
It all began with my mother, and also the fact that at the time in the transition between the apartheid government and the democratic government we have today, TV wasn't a big thing. And I mean, also there was obviously the fact that there were sanctions in South Africa or on South Africa in the 80s. So I grew up without a TV. We got our first TV when I was a teenager.
Wow.
So that meant that bedtime stories was a big deal in our home. And my mom actually read to me into my teens. And then I listened in when she read to my sisters as well. So I actually have a very long tradition of reading, thanks to my mom and dad. Because my dad also fostered it and encouraged it, but he encouraged the German side. So I actually had this really wonderful background in not just English literature and specifically fantasy, because that was my mom's favorite genre, but also German literature through my dad.
Hmm. Were you the type of child that would see a white wall and think that it needs color?
No, definitely not. I follow rules very strictly.
Oh, no, not a rule follower.
And yet, I'm a nonconformist, so it's kind of it's this dichotomy I struggle with all the time.
Well, maybe that works out, because you could be the nonconformist and they wouldn't catch on, because everybody would view you as a rule follower. Kind of,
yes,
incognito.
To a certain extent, yes, exactly, because, you know, while everyone else is smoking, I'd say, well, no, I don't smoke.
Did you have a lot of access to books as a child in South Africa, or was there a wide selection? Did you feel like you were limited in what you could get?
There was definitely a limitation through things like libraries, because libraries are hard to come by and they were very limited. And then I did receive a lot of gifts from family. And the best gift for me every year for Christmas and my birthday was my uncle's gift of a book voucher.
Ooh.
And that would, I would honestly go into the bookstore and plan what I could buy on my book voucher at the value of $10.
How exciting.
Yes, it was. It was very big, but definitely there were a lot of things that I didn't have access to. So, for example, since meeting my husband, I have come across other fantasy authors that were well known in the Western world in the 80s and 90s that I absolutely had no contact with and no access to as a child.
Hmm. Wow. So, Beam, you want to roll a commercial?
Sure. Let's see here. Oh, yeah, we got this one right here. This one is for Whoopi Likes Her Bacon Crispy.
Every person has a private life and a secret self. This is true of those we know and people we only know because they are famous. Discover fascinating, intimate, clever, witty, poignant, insightful tales from a diverse roster of notable women who dare reveal both the unknown and the previously undisclosed. But these are not gossipy tales. No, they are personal, anecdotal, always meaningful stories for quiet reading, sharing aloud, even performing from the stage. Compiled by Detroit playwright Jay Ajluni, Whoopi Likes Her Bacon Crispy, 65 fascinating excerpts from the memoirs of famous and infamous women, is illustrated with whimsical portraits that capture these remarkable celebrities at their best. Choose your own from laminate hardcover, softback, and digital editions, all proudly published by Fresh Ink Group. Come away with a richer appreciation of these talented women and smile for permitting them to entertain you in unexpected and delightful ways.
All right. Well, my audio file shifted. That wasn't the one that I was supposed to play first, but there you go. That's in pre-sale, so get out there and check it out.
Yeah, I just received my hardcover copy in the mail a couple of days ago. It is a very cool book, very thick, just full of all kinds of cool quotes, fun artwork, just a great book.
All right. Now, Astrid, you wrote your first novel at age 12. What was it about, and where did the idea come from?
It's a African occult urban fantasy set in Uganda about a young girl who discovers her magical powers and attends a magical school which trains in African magic. And then she discovers that there's a deeper layer to her history and that there's more to her than meets the eye. And that is when she sets out to find Atlantis. And this book was inspired while I was reading The Fingerprints of the Gods by Graham Hancock at age 12. It was a bit above my ability to understand what was in that book, but it was enough that it truly inspired me and gave me that push to start writing. The second part of the push came from my dissatisfaction with the fantasy genre at the time, especially those books I had access to, where the main characters were all weedy white boys, in, from my perspective, and all the multiple cultures that were described of elves and dwarves and all these fantastical creatures, to me, were all Western culture in varying degrees. And I wanted to break away from that and create something with a stronger African connection to reflect the multicultural society I was growing up in.
Yeah, you've got to definitely have a different perspective than most writers that were born in the Western world. Is this book available?
Not yet. I'm still working on it. The point is that as I've grown as a person and as a writer, I've realized that the one key thing I need to do is actually go to Uganda and experience that country for myself before I can actually finish writing the beginning of the story. The rest of the fantasy, traveling to Atlantis and experiencing the fantastical land of Atlantis, is obviously all in my imagination, so that's much easier to come up with. But I would like to give the urban fantasy aspect of the story a deeper rooting and honor the cultures that are included in my story.
Yeah, that's, I mean, there's research and then there's research. You know, some people, oh, well, I Googled it. And you're like, well, I got on a plane and flew to Uganda. That's cool.
Well, as a social anthropologist, I kind of feel that it's my duty to do field work. Yes.
Yeah, that's cool. I mean, I'd love to be able to do that.
Yeah. Well, it hasn't been in my cards just yet, so we'll keep on trying. In the meantime, I've been writing things set in fantastical places, so I can just imagine and not worry about the reality too much.
Okay. Go ahead, Stephen. I was waiting for you to jump in.
So, Astra, where did you go to school?
I attended a German foreign school in South Africa. It was called the German School in Pretoria. And that was for the entirety of my schooling, from preschool all the way through to my final matric year, as they call it in South Africa. And it was a very, very good experience, although it did come with some downsides, since we lived quite far away from the school, so I had to take a bus in for an hour-long bus drive to get to school, and then had to wait after school for the bus to leave and then go with everyone who lived on our side of town. So it was hard to make connections with the children who lived closer to school. And then I was the odd one out, because most of the students attending the school were either children of German expats who were working in BMW and Mercedes and were German diplomats as well, or they were descendants of Germans who'd come to Southern Africa as missionaries. And so these two cultural groups were very different from myself, where my dad just moved to South Africa to study and kind of got stuck. So I've always had that situation of being the odd one out, which I think has definitely been very formative and influenced who I am and how I write.
Okay. Now, you had mentioned getting a degree while you were living in Mexico. So you went to university?
Yes, absolutely. I did a Bachelor of Arts in Psychology, Social Anthropology, and English Literature at the University of Pretoria in South Africa. And then I decided to specialize in social anthropology and did an extra year in South Africa before going with my then fiance, now husband, to Mexico to meet his family. And I had this great opportunity to do a master's course at the National Autonomous University of Mexico, which has one of the most incredible anthropology departments in the world, actually.
You think you'll go back to school again?
I have toyed with the idea of doing a PhD. There are some things emerging in Sweden that I find highly fascinating and would love to study. So far, it hasn't been in the cards, but who knows what life will bring.
Right. As far as do you have a day job? We know you're a writer. Has the anthropology come in handy for a day job?
To a certain extent, yes, as has prior experience as an administrator from a holiday job as a teenager. I've been working as an administrator for a Swedish organization that helps local Muslim associations register the work that they do in adult education so that they can apply for funding from the state for their work. And yes, the anthropology has come in handy.
Well, that's good, because I know some people that have degrees and things, and life has taken them in a different direction, and they work in other jobs, and it's like has nothing to do with the degree, and you know they tend to get a little bummed out about it, but you know that's life.
Yes, that's what I find is the beauty of anthropology, is since it is the study of human culture and human nature in from a social perspective, it really can be applied to almost anything. And I actually love the fact that I use my anthropology not only for my work in my day job, but also in my writing. It's the cornerstone of my world building comes from my anthropological background.
That's interesting. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't have thought of it like that. But yeah, if you're building worlds and you're into the whole cultural understanding of a lot of these things, you could build some really cool worlds.
I definitely like to think so.
So, Beam, you want to roll another commercial?
Sure.
Aspiring young Chinese immigrant, GGO, survives by working as a stripper, but she strives for true success in the U.S. real estate industry. Navigating this highly competitive business is tough, especially when her only support comes from the deeply flawed man she loves and her old cohorts from the strip club. Issues of betrayal and trust, loyalty and commitment complicate her goals, even as one lesbian friend adds new dimensions to her understanding of love versus desire. Then the market crashes and financial turmoil threatens to rob GGO of all she has achieved. Can she find new ways to chase her dreams and still manage to keep her clothes on? Or might she find a better reason to take them off? Girl Wears Those Shoes is a tale of love and power. The story of one woman who wants to make the world her own, if only she can figure out how. Proudly published by Fresh Ink Group, Girl Wears Those Shoes is available in all hardcover, softcover, and all digital formats worldwide.
All right. So that one's populating right now, correct?
Get out there and place your order.
Okay. So, Astrid, we've heard about the, you know, going to school and your day job. And what do you like to do to relax? Do you have any hobbies or interests? How do you spend your downtime?
The quirkier, the better.
Of late, mostly writing. But I have made a promise not to write over the December Christmas break. And I'm actually contemplating doing some cross-stitching, which I haven't done in a while.
Wow.
All right, cross-stitching.
Is that something you were doing all the way back to being a little girl?
I started in my teens, and I kind of just really enjoyed the way that an image can unfold stitch by stitch. And that kind of really stuck with me. I also had the situation that my best friend was an artist, and she was incredibly good. So I didn't want to impinge on her creative domain. And so I found something else that was creative and gave me that same creative output without becoming an artist in myself.
Yeah, it's interesting you say, you know, an image, you create an image a stitch at a time. That's kind of like writing, you know, you're writing, you're telling a story and creating characters and worlds a word at a time. So you kind of cross-stitch the words.
Yep.
All right, so your writing process. Where does these ideas come from? Do you outline? Let's start there. Do you outline or do you just start writing?
That depends on the book. Some stories just pour out. You know, I have the idea. I sit down and I just start writing and it comes out with no outline whatsoever. The Word Mage's Tales are all of that type. While other stories, I will definitely sit down and do a basic outline of the plot and a general idea on what I want for the characters. The Apprentice Storyteller, for example, is one like that. And then I have the ones that are in between because I do fairy tale retellings. And so there I have the original fairy tale as my outline. So I kind of divide which aspect of the original fairy tale goes in which chapter, and then I just write.
Okay. Steven?
Do you have beta readers? Do you show your work to people? Do you go straight to an editor or straight to publishing?
Absolutely. Beta readers are crucial, and I actually have a really nice team of beta readers that I trust and whose advice has been so helpful. So my alphas are my mother and two sisters, because they don't take any nonsense from me. They tell me like it is, straight out, with no frills or anything. If it's crap, they tell me. And if it's good, they'll ignore it.
Yeah, I was going to ask that earlier because you had mentioned that your mother read to you even into your teens. If she was still alive, and does she read your books, and what does she think of them? Well, there we go.
Yes,
she's going to be truthful.
My mom has been one of my staunchest supporters, and she's there every step of the way, even though she lives on the other side of the world in New Zealand. This is something that brings us closer together because she reads my books, and I'm prodding her to send me her book because she's been working on a book for decades now, and she still won't send it to me. Yes, so beta readers are definitely very crucial. So once it's gone through the blender of my immediate family, I will then reconstruct my story and send it to my next group of beta readers who are fans, a lot of them, who have kind of long for this ride. And they each have sort of their own ability. You know, one is very good at noticing spelling and grammar errors, while another one has a lot of general knowledge that can help with my stories. And once they've gone through the process, then I send it to my editor. And she's a wonderful, wonderful lady, also resident in South Africa. And she's just incredible. I've worked with her on 3 books now, and she just transforms something that's good into really, really awesome stuff.
You want to tell her name?
Her name is Joy Sefton. And she's a true fairy godmother of stories.
The fairy godmother editor.
Yes, she is.
So do your beta readers tend to agree, or do they all sometimes all disagree? Some think it's great and some think it's terrible.
They generally agree that it's good, and where things need to be changed, they'll often disagree on, which I find quite amusing. It's also very helpful for me because they will show me where something isn't clear. And that, I think, is the most important function of a beta reader, is to be able to find plot holes or places where you've done a leap of thought that's obvious to you as the author, but which isn't obvious to the reader. And those are the ones that you need to catch early on so that the editing process becomes more focused on the flow of the story than of what and how you're saying it.
Yeah, anytime you wind up answering questions or explaining something, then the book didn't do its job.
Yeah.
Precisely.
Yeah. So what, you know, it's always, you know, important to have those beta readers, and it's really cool that you have beta readers that you can really trust. Now, once it's published and it's out there, and the fans start reading it, what kind of reaction have you been getting from actual readers who have purchased the book? What kind of feedback?
Overall, very good feedback. If we think about The Apprentice Storyteller, for example, which I released last December, has over 60 reviews on Amazon, and I think it's around 75 ratings. And there are 3, 4, and 5-star ratings. I have no 1 and 2-star ratings for that book.
Well, that's good.
All right.
It's very good. It's incredible. I'm quite blown away by even the people who dislike the book will choose a 3-star rating simply because they acknowledge that there is a lot of merit in it.
Have you had any personal interactions with fans, meeting a fan at a signing or a reading or something that stands out to you?
I have, unfortunately, not been able to do physical meetings with my fans primarily due to COVID, which has stopped all travel, but also being in Sweden and having most of my fan base in the United Kingdom and the United States makes that quite difficult. However, I have connected with many wonderful people through Instagram and Facebook, and I've become very good friends with quite a few of them. One of my early fans, she's actually from Norwegian, and she came across my books through another fairy tale retellings author who I worked together with 2 years ago. And so through that connection, this reader kind of came into my life, and she was just reading all my books and kept leaving these wonderful reviews. And then she reached out on Instagram, and then she found out that I actually have a Facebook group. And she's been absolutely wonderful. And she's actually the most active member in my fairy tale book club on Facebook. And we meet up every 6 weeks and just talk about books and all sorts of fun stuff.
Yeah, with Instagram, I mean, that's why you're on this show, because I saw you on Instagram, and we've had a couple of back and forth, I believe, and I was like, hey, you want to be on the show?
Yes, Instagram is where I am most active on social media. Facebook I use mostly for my interaction with fellow authors, whereas Instagram is very much the platform where I interact with my readers.
All right. Okay, so, Stephen, you want to move into talking about the books now?
Yeah. And I think the third one there, Aspiring, is the one that she said it was her first. Is that right, Astrid?
That's correct. Aspiring is my first novel.
So what was that about?
Yeah, tell us something about that.
When I was 15, I read Ella Enchanted by Gail Carson Levine. And
I remember that book.
I'm sure that if people haven't read the book, they have seen the movie with Anne Hathaway.
I saw the movie. I didn't read the book, but I saw the movie.
And it really moved me because I absolutely loved the concept, but I was upset that it was yet another Cinderella retelling. And I said to myself, there are so many wonderful fairy tales out there. Why do we always have to have Cinderella, Beauty and the Beast, Snow White, and Sleeping Beauty? And that's when I came up with the idea of actually writing a retelling of my favorite German Grimm fairy tale, which is Brother and Sister, and which is not commonly known in English. But I didn't just want to do a retelling of the story. I wanted to do the backstory for why these two children run away from home and are pursued by a stepmother who is a witch. And so Aspiring essentially became that backstory, written in the style of a memoir. So it's the main character reliving her experiences as a child, but with this sort of Ella Enchanted feel to it, and also heavily influenced by my then favorite author, which was Jane Austen. And so it fuses these different styles with the fantasy genre. And that is Aspiring. And then it switches, and I change the narrator for Becoming, part two of the siblings' tale, so that it actually becomes the fairy tale. And Becoming follows the fairy tale very closely.
Okay.
So Aspiring is the first book in, it wound up being a series?
It's a two-part retelling of the fairy tale. And okay. Then, yes, I decided to expand upon that and create a fairy tale retelling series with sort of standalones or at the most two-part retellings. So as it stands right now, this series has a retelling of Giselle, which is a French ballet, but I actually went and looked at the Slavic folktale that underlies the ballet, which is a fascinating story. And so I drew on the Slavic folktale for my retelling, which is called Gisela's Passion. And that one serves as a prequel to the siblings' tale, simply because it deals with the parents' generation, and some of the characters who are mentioned in the siblings' tale are the main characters of Gisela's Passion. And last week, I released Naya's Wish, which is a retelling of the Grimm fairy tale, The Nixie of the Mill Pond, another lesser-known fairy tale. And that one is set in the same world, but is completely a standalone story. It is not technically connected to the other three.
Okay, though the other three are connected, they're still basically standalone?
They are, yes.
Okay.
Aspiring and Becoming are best to be read together because they form a cohesive whole. While if you only read Aspiring, you kind of left with this question of, well, what happens next? And if you read Becoming, you can, but you are left with the questions of, well, how did all of this happen?
Yeah, I've made that mistake with jumping in on like book two of like a 3-book series, and I can't remember the series now, but I grabbed book two because it was available where I was at, and started reading it, and it's like, well, there was a lot of things that were just unanswered. It's like, all right, how did this happen? And wait a minute. So I think I like stopped halfway through and said, I'll wait for the first one to get in, and which is what I did. And it made a lot of sense once you read book one, go all the way through.
Yeah. Well, what I found was very nice. I have quite a few reviewers who read the most recent book, and they all said that definitely a standalone. They're now curious to read the other books in the series, but they were comfortable reading this book, even though it's the third book, well, the fourth book in the series.
So Enchanted Forest and Enchanted Waters, those go together?
Yes, those are charity anthologies that I have contributed to. Enchanted Waters is raising money towards ocean conservation. We're donating all the proceeds of that book to Oceana, which works to protect our oceans from overfishing and to help communities who live off fishing to do so sustainably. And we had so much fun working on that book together that we actually decided to turn it into a series, and hence Enchanted Forests is now the next one. It's available to pre-order at the moment, and the proceeds of that one will be going towards forest conservation. And we are actually right now in the process of deciding which charity we are going to support with this book.
Is there a third book coming?
There will be Enchanted Flames and potentially Enchanted Skies.
Oh, cool.
Now, these are
and
short
Enchanted
stories?
Enchanted Flames will support a firefighting or forest fires charity. That much is decided. And yes, these are short stories.
Okay.
Enchanted Waters, we were 8 authors working together on that one. And the short story that I produced for Enchanted Waters is actually a companion piece to Nayia's Wish, as it retells the fairy tale from the original perspective, since my novel-length retelling tells it from the female character's perspective, and the original fairy tale is told from the miller's perspective. So since it was a lesser-known tale, I really wanted to give the character a voice, but it didn't really fit into my novel. So I had that short story. And when Alice Avinya asked me if I wanted to join her anthology, I actually had something to offer. So that was really nice.
Mm. All right. Stephen, you want to throw in another commercial?
Yep, throw it in there.
All right.
I'm in St. Louis, where the windmills turn, behind the fence where lifers yearn. I see tempers flare and souls burn. Walk the line, or it's your turn. It's funny how little things give us the greatest ambition. The differing shades of color throughout the day's sky. The slight smile and familiar aroma of a lover. The laugh of a child. In From Chaos with Love, Poetry from the Inside Out, this astounding collection of 220 original poems, Joshua Stutzman shares his vision of how we live day to day, often unaware of how many ways we affect those around us, family, friends, even strangers. In that, he finds a unique and poignant beauty, an exquisite appreciation for the wonder he hopes to share with his poetry. Proudly published by Fresh Ink Group, From Chaos with Love is the first collection from a man describing what we all know but find too easy to forget. From Chaos with Love, Poetry from the Inside Out, by Joshua Stutzman.
All right. There's a cool video for that on the Fresh Ink Group YouTube channel, so get over there, smash the like button, share it, subscribe if you haven't. The usual.
The usual.
The usual.
So looking at these covers, Iron Walls is the one that stands out to me as looking a little bit different than the others. Is that a standalone or is that part of a series?
That one is also an anthology. It's a recent release, and it was actually run by an entirely different group of authors, the Burning Embers group, who regularly put out anthologies. This one is dystopian, and hence the different cover. It's a nice collection. And it's the piece that I submitted for that one is very different from my other writings.
Well, what's it about?
It's called In Pursuit of Independence. And it follows a character through her most important day of her life. So Mizubuki is an economist, and she actually finds herself in the situation where there's a trade war that's about to start, and she can see that is the outcome, that one of the entities in the empire that she works for is actually trying to provoke. And so she needs to come up with a way of diffusing that problem and avoid war. But at the same time, it was a way for me to take on some ideas that have been put forward by the current feminist movement that don't resonate with me, but to actually engage with them in a way that I put myself into the shoes of someone who truly believes that these tenets are true. And how would I, in my experience as a human being, respond to that belief? So that is what In Pursuit of Independence deals with.
And this was the first anthology with this group that you participated in?
Yes, it is.
You expect more with them?
I highly doubt it. It has not been a very positive experience. But I will be continuing to write stories in this vein, because I've also, through my son, had some thoughts about certain things that are, again, said by the extreme left and also feminist ideals talking about men and boys. So I've already started writing a follow-up story about a young man in the same empire and cultural setting as In Pursuit of Independence. And there are some other ideas floating around in my head, so I might actually turn it into a series of short stories of its own, and one day maybe publish them all together as a single anthology.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Yeah. Now, I'm looking at the book covers here. The Companion's Tale, The Last Warrior, Warring Lions. These are from a series?
Yes, absolutely. The Word Mage's Tale series is a collection of standalone novellas, each with a fairy tale tone to them, but also they are invented. They are my own tales. I have not based them on any existing tales. And they serve as the history for the world that I created for the apprentice storyteller. And so these are the tales that the apprentice learns from the master storyteller he is apprenticed to. And I've actually written these stories in such a way that each one refers back to the apprentice storyteller. So you'll have a prologue for each of the shorter novellas where we see the apprentice as he tells the tale to a group of people. And through that, then it refers back to whatever scene I refer to these stories in the novel, The Apprentice Storyteller.
Okay.
You have more of those planned?
Yeah, so I was going to ask.
Yes, there are 10 stories thus far, fully formed in my mind, and I'll be releasing 3 next spring. And I have already released 4 of them. 3 of them are commercially available, and the Sewing Princess is only available to my newsletter subscribers and Street Team members.
Hmm. So, Beam, you want to roll another ad?
Yeah.
Elena Dukani inherits her family's castle in Romania, a land dipped in myths, folklore, and the legendary Walking Dead. The local proverb serves as a warning. Do not speak badly of the devil, because you cannot know to whom you will belong. When she's attacked by an international assassin, only her deceased husband and her ex-boyfriend's live presence can protect her on her journey to the mountainous region of Transylvania. But that's not the only problem troubling Elena. Who is that boy invading her dreams? And what really happened to a priceless gem-crusted silver cross buried by an earthquake in the 15th century? Who's stalking Elena? Who wants her dead, and why? Legacy of Danger by Patricia A. Guthrie is a paranormal romantic thriller with a deep mystery and plenty of suspense. It'll haunt you in jacketed hardcover, softcover, and all ebook formats worldwide. Legacy of Danger by Patricia A. Guthrie is proudly published by Fresh Ink Group.
All right. There's a video for that one, too. It's a common thing. There's a common thing coming on you. And that's a really good book, too. I did the editing on that, and just a fantastic story. If you're into paranormal, romance, murder, mystery, thriller, that's everything's in there. It's a stew of genres.
So we've got 2 more covers here that look like they go together. Ethernia, Gifted Blood Academy, freshman year. And I can't quite read the other one.
Ethernia, the Gifted Blood Academy, is its own thing. That, too, is a group effort. It is an anthology of short stories, some verging on novellas, about a group of multiracial students attending a magical academy. And each author writes about the events of the school year from the perspective of a different species. So I have the task of writing about the pixies, and my pixie character is actually very different from anything I've written before. And I've modeled her behavior on Asperger's syndrome to bring to light the character traits and the difficulties that people who have or who are on the autism spectrum face in daily interactions. And this one is planned, the Ethernia project is a 4-year project. So the second book will be releasing in January. And then there will be a 3rd and 4th book following each of the 4 years of school, high school.
Okay.
So what's your big seller? What's your most popular book?
The Apprentice Storyteller at this point.
And is that the one that you have an audiobook for?
No, it isn't. Aspiring, which is my debut novel, is the one that I have an audiobook for. And the sequel's audiobook will be hopefully released in the coming year.
So what's the story behind your audiobook? How did that come about? Is that something that you initiated or your publisher did?
I am self-published. My publisher is my own imprint. So yes, it is something I initiated. I came across a lovely narrator who had the perfect voice for the tone that I would like to set with Aspiring. And she actually read and reviewed Aspiring of her own volition at some point before I actually had the opportunity to listen to one of her audiobooks. And it was sort of in the confluence of our activity on social media that we kind of realized that it was a great fit. And she really wanted to narrate the book and gave me a good price for it. So we went ahead and did it.
So she produced it? She
produced it, yes.
Terrific. So you own that then. You don't have to do a shared royalty thing through ACX or any of those other arrangements.
Yeah.
That's always
good. Do you envision doing more audiobooks that way?
I definitely want to do more audiobooks, although Gillian's voice is great for the fairy tales. I do need to see about finding someone with a more mature voice for some of my other stories.
Hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of demand for the voice talent out there right now, and the costs are rising.
Absolutely, and I've noticed that, and it has been part of the reason why I haven't been able to move forward as quickly with the audiobooks as I would have liked.
Yeah, we've been having fun with audiobooks. We add music and sound effects in the background all the way through them as well. But, you know, we do it as a flat work-for-hire project so that the author owns the audiobook at the end. And, again, finding the affordable voice talent that can really do a good job is definitely a challenge.
It is.
So, Astrid, where can people find you on social media? Twitter, Instagram, your Facebook group?
Instagram is your best bet. I go under the Instagram handle of astrid.v.j_author_official. And that is the social media platform that I work from. I am not on Twitter. I have decided to not spread myself too thinly and rather focus on one platform at a time and grow it slowly. I do have a YouTube channel that is moderately active. I most often post my book trailers on it, but I do have some other content on my YouTube channel. And then on Facebook, I have a page for my authoring activities and the reader group, which is focused on fairy tales and particularly the platform where I run my fairy tale book club. That one is called Elizabeth and Edvard's World, based on the fairy tale retelling series that has the same name, Elizabeth and Edvard's World.
Okay. Well, we want to thank you for taking time out of your day and chatting with us, Astrid. We're glad to have had you on the show.
Thank you so very much for this opportunity. It's been really amazing to speak to you.
Definitely. Now, when you get ready to release something new, make sure you let us know so that we can put it in our newsletter and talk about it on the podcast as well.
Thank you. I'll be sure to do so.
Great. So next week, we're going to have Nicholas Rossis. He's in Greece, and he's a social media guru, excellent author, children's books, adult books, just a good guy to talk to, and we're looking forward to having him.
And that will be followed by a rerun, but right after that, we will be back live again with Robert G. Willicroft.
Yeah. After that, Houston real estate magnat Jenny Wong, author of Girl Wears Those Shoes, will be our guest. And after that,
Abigail Hugeny, author of There Must Be Something in the Water.
Now, we're not quite sure what we're doing over the holidays, but right after the holidays, we've got author P.L. Stewart.
Followed by Michael Egging, another author.
All right. Thanks again. Remember, people, get out there, post reviews for all of the books. If you like Astrid VJ's books, make sure you post some reviews for her. It's all about supporting the authors that you like.
And we will talk to you again next week. Take care, everybody.
All right. Thanks, Astrid.
Thank you, Astrid.
You've been a part of Voice of Indy, a production of Fresh Ink Group. Spread the word, support our guests, then find us at freshinkgroup.com and be sure to hashtag Fresh Ink Group.